We have a good number present this evening. We appreciate the presence of everyone. I hope you've got your Bible with you and eager to take that and study with us as we talk about things that have to do with serving God and going to heaven in the after while. Tomorrow night will be the last in our series of studies, and tomorrow night our topic will be selling and stirring. It'll be about Ahab and Jezebel. Ahab sold himself to do evil because Jezebel, his wife, stirred him up. What is it that the text says about Ahab so that he is described as a man who sold himself to do evil? We'll list a number of things. And what is it that Jezebel did so the text would describe her as stirring him up? We'll list a number of things there as well. So come back and be a part of that study as we bring this series to a close. Back in the fall, I spent a little time reading a book that shares the title to several other books, and the book was called When the Center Held. The book was a focus on the rescue of the presidency in the wake of Watergate. It was about President Ford. And the title of the book is based upon Ford's work as president. It was much like his college days when he played center in football. Now, I was drawn to that book for three reasons. One is I've always been fascinated with the accidental president. That is Gerald Ford. Wasn't my favorite, but it was an accidental president. That's fascinating to me. And secondly, because of the author, his chief of staff and later his secretary of defense, Don Rumsfeld. But more importantly, I was drawn to the book because the title was intriguing. When the Center Held. The author made this note at the beginning of the book. He said, in football, the center is among the least glorified positions. Nonetheless, it is of central importance. In the middle of the offensive line, it is invariably the center's responsibility to handle the football at the start of every play on offense. If the play goes well, one of the other players on the team receives the plaudits. The tailback who breaks a long run, a quarterback who launches a Hail Mary pass, or a receiver who catches the ball and races for the winning touchdown. Though the fans may take little notice, the center's teammates recognize and appreciate his importance. From 1932 to 1934, Ford was at the center of the University of Michigan's varsity football team. In 1932 and again in 1933, the Michigan Wolverines went undefeated and became national champions. His final season, 1934, however, was tough. While the team won only one game, Jerry Ford at center remained its heart. I know a little about football, very little about football. But I do understand a little more about the presidency, and I see a parallel between the center at football and the center with reference to the presidency. But I'm not interested tonight in either one of those. There seem many parallels to that concept in the spiritual realm. When the center holds. The center has to hold, whether you're talking about as an individual, that the center must hold. And if the center doesn't hold, nothing else is going to matter. The same thing is true with reference to the church. But especially is that true as we focus tonight on the home and the family. The center must hold. So let's talk tonight about when the center holds. This is a study of the home and the family. Let's focus how the center must hold, the family, the home. That if the family and the home is what it ought to be, the center is holding. But if the center doesn't hold, then we have chaos not only in the family, we have it in the church and we have it in the nation. And so let's talk about when the center holds. Let's notice four things. Here's the first. Let's talk about how the family and the home is the center. The family and the home is the center. Now, that's not to suggest that God is not the center of all that we are and all that we do. In fact, He is the center. But there is another sense in which the family and the home is the center. So we're not denying that God is the center of all that is in our life. He is the center of our life in the home as an individual and as a church. But there's another sense in which the family is the center. How so? Let's list some things. First of all, let's take note of the fact that creation started with the family. Let's open our Bibles to Genesis chapters 1 and 2. Creation began and started with the family. And I don't mean by that on the first day, but there in the creation week, the family was created. That's what I want you to see. So let's go to Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1 talks about what was done on the first day, the second day, and the third and the fourth and the fifth. But I want you to notice now that God created man on the sixth day, and now let's jump over to chapter 2 and in verse 24. When God created woman, he created marriage. There's a point we want to make from this. Let's look at verse 24. Therefore, man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. So when God created woman, God had created man already, but when God creates woman, he's now created the marriage relationship. So there in the beginning, the family was created before government, before nations, and before even the church of our Lord. I'm not saying the church of the Lord wasn't already in the mind of God. It was. But the church has not yet come into existence. Nations are not yet in existence, nor is the governments in existence. So as important as government is, important as nations are, as important as the church is, God had already created the home and the family. So I understand the family and home is the center, and one reason is that creation started with the family. Here's something else. The family and the home is center because all teaching and all training starts at home. The parents are responsible for the training and the rearing of their children. Now, you may send your children to school, and they may learn a lot in the public school, and we think the school needs to do a good job teaching our children. But God laid upon the parents the responsibility of training and teaching their children. So let's open our Bibles. If you don't already have a Bible, find one perhaps in the pew close to you. Let's trace some passages in both the Old and in the New Testament. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 6. This is on the verge of entering into the land of Canaan as Moses is preaching four sermons. You may think perhaps three, but four sermons that he was preaching on the verge of going into the land of Canaan. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, he is instilling in them the importance of training their children to walk in the fear of God. Notice beginning at verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your might. Verse 6, these things I command you today, and they shall be in your heart. Here's the first thing. You abide by the word and make sure the word is in your heart. And now you're going to be prepared, and you're not prepared unless you do that, to teach and train your children. Let's go further. At verse 7, you shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up. Here I'm learning that parents have the responsibility, first of all, to give heed to the word themselves, verse 6, and then, and only then, can they teach them effectively to their children. You are familiar with Proverbs 22 and in verse 6, train a child in the way that he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from that. So we have the responsibility to train a child in the way that he should go. I'm convinced that Proverbs 22:6 is not only talking about train them in spiritual matters, that obviously is included, but train them about life, train them in the way they should go, and when they're old, they'll not depart from that. Let's go to the New Testament for one more reference. In speaking of the family relationship, this is how we live life in the church, Ephesians chapters 4, 5, and 6. And so in those chapters, here's how we live as those who are in this body of Christ that he is so ably described in chapters 1 through 3. One of the responsibilities is that we're to train our children. Notice he said, honor your father and mother, and beginning at verse 2, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and you live long on the earth. Now verse 4, you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and the admonition of the Lord. Well, we've established that parents are responsible. That's one of the reasons that family in the home is the center. I want to suggest to you that it's in the home and it's in the family where children learn about morals. Oh, they may learn the wrong thing about morals at school. They may learn the wrong thing about morals in society. But if they're going to learn about the principles of morals, They're going to learn it in the home. No matter how much it may be taught from the pulpit, how much it's emphasized in the Bible class, if it's not emphasized in the home, children never learn the principles of morals. It's in the home where they should learn the principle that drinking is wrong. It's in the home where they should learn that dancing is a sin. It's in the home where they should learn cursing is not acceptable. It's in the home where they should learn immodesty is not acceptable before God. They learn all of those principles of morals in the home. It's in the home where they learn the importance of God and His Word, where there's an emphasis on priority. They're not going to learn that at church if it's not emphasized at home. That's why the home and the family is centered. They're learning that God is important. We put Him first in our lives. His Word is our standard. They learned that from discussion at home, Deuteronomy 6. It's in the home where boys learn this is how you're going to love the woman that you choose to be your wife. They learn that from watching daddy. They learn how you treat a woman. They learn how you treat a wife. Where'd they learn it? They learn it from watching daddy. And it's where the young girl learns how you respect a husband when she has one. She learns that from watching mama. She learns that in the home. That's instilled in them from their youth. It's in the home where they learn about the roles of marriage. What does it mean to submit to your husband? How do you do that? What does that involve? They learn that by watching mama. What does it mean to be the head of the family? Does it mean to be a boss? Does it mean that you're commanding? Does that mean you're harsh? Or does that mean you lead and guide with gentleness? They learn that from daddy. See, that's where they learn that is in the home. That's why the family and the home is centered. But here's the third thing about that concept. Family and home is the center. It's center because all that is around us is a reflection of the home. All that is around us is a reflection of the home. Let's grab our Old Testament this time and go to 1 Kings chapter 15. In 1 Kings chapter 15, this is simply a sampling of what could be said about nearly every king found in the book of 1 or 2 Kings. The kings who were evil were reflecting merely the homes in which they were raised. They're showing the kind of homes they grew up in. Let's notice 1 Kings chapter 15. Now Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, became king over Israel in the second year of Asa, king of Judah. And he reigned over Israel 2 years. Now verse 26. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord and walked in the ways of his father and in his sins by which he made Israel to sin. You see the point? Here is a young man that grew up watching his father's sin, watching his father's idolatry, and he walked in the ways of his father. Well, that's just a sampling. We could find other examples and another example and another example that the kings who were evil were merely reflecting the homes they were raised in. Well, the same thing is true in our own society. You take a look around and you can see what's going on in the home and in the family. You look around in the schools. We have a number of school teachers in the church where I preach. And they will give testimony to the fact that you can look at the behavior of children as a rule, not always. But you look at the behavior of a child, and you look at the kind of student they are, whether they're doing good, are they excelling, or are they failing, has a whole lot to do with the home and the family they have. It has everything to do with their family life. Well, you look around at the church, and some churches are not very spiritual. There's a great deal of laxity. There's a great deal of a disinterest in spiritual things, even though they go to church all of the time. And that becomes a reflection of the kind of homes and families that church has. Show me another church where things are strong. And children are growing up and becoming just as strong as their parents. And I'll show you a church where their families are what they ought to be. You take a look at the nation. The nation is merely a reflection of the kind of leaders that we have. We complain about all the corruption going on in Washington. You know why we have corrupt people in Washington? Because we have a corrupt nation that sends corrupt people to Washington. It's a reflection of the home and the family. Furthermore, the morals that we see. The morals are learned and practiced at home. And we look around at our neighbors and friends and they're drinking. Where'd they learn that? Most likely at home. They're gambling. Where'd they learn that? Most likely at home. They're cursing. Where'd they learn that? Most likely at home. That's a reflection of what's going on in the home. And so for these three reasons, creation started in the family. Started with the family. All teaching and training starts at home. And all around us is a reflection of the home. We know the home and the family is its center. I'm here tonight to suggest that when the center holds, it's when the family is what it should be. That's what we're talking about. When the family is what it ought to be, that's when the center is holding. Now let's go further. We've seen the family and home is the center. Let's talk about what it means when the center holds. You may be sitting here tonight saying, "Preacher, I understand when the center holds. I know that's when the family is strong. But what does it mean when the center holds? What does all of that mean?" We're simply talking about the family unit stays strong. When the center holds is when the family unit stays strong. When the family and the home does not fail. The family unit is strong when you choose to serve the Lord. You remember in Joshua 24 and verse 15, "Choose you this day whom you will serve." And then Joshua said, "But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." You can choose to serve those gods on the other side. But for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. The family unit is strong when everyone in that family says we're going to serve the Lord. The family unit stays strong when those within the family are doing their job well, regardless of what anyone else may be doing. Look with me to Romans chapter 2 and in 12 and in verse 2, that should be, instead of verse 1. Romans chapter 12 and in verse 2, "Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind." I want to suggest the family unit is strong when everyone in the family is doing their job, regardless of what others in the family may be doing. They're not conformed to the pressure. It's when the family unit is strong is when everyone in the family is doing their job regardless of what other families may be doing. They're trying to stay strong. The family unit is strong when the service is not determined by other Christians. In other words, our service to the Lord and our being the family we should be is not determined by other families being strong like ours. What if they're not as strong? What if they go the other direction? Suppose they slide down the hill. Suppose there are the dysfunctional family. Family unit that's strong is one that their service is not determined by others. The family unit is strong when we're willing to make radical changes so we can be faithful. We may have to do some drastic things that others think we're crazy for making those kind of radical changes. It may be a change in job. It may be a change in location. We make some very drastic changes because we want to be faithful to the Lord. That's when the family unit is strong. Family members are faithful to the Lord. That is, they're faithful to Him and to His Word, even if everything else around them fails. That's when the center holds. In other words, if society fails, the center still holds. When society fails, in the first century, you'll recall how that Caesar worship was demanded. You can't even have a smattering knowledge of the book of Revelation without getting a flavor of the fact that Caesar worship was demanded. In order to be a citizen of the kingdom, that is not of the kingdom of God, but of the Roman kingdom, you must say, "Caesar is Lord." But I want to tell you, the faithful refused. "Be thou faithful unto death, even to the point of death." If you're going to be faithful to the Lord, you had to refuse to bow to Caesar and say he's Lord. Here is a case when people would refuse to do that. Society is failing, but the center is holding. That's when the center holds. I want to suggest to you the family members are faithful to the Lord even if the local church may fail. The center still holds. The church at Corinth had troubles, didn't it? The church had all kinds of problems. That is, the church at Corinth, it was a divided church. I don't know of a church around more divided than Corinth. And yet what I want to suggest to you, 2 Corinthians chapter 2 shows there were some who still wanted to do what was right. There were some, when they learned they needed to withdraw from the brother who was the fornicator, did that. And they embraced him and they would forgive him. In fact, that was exacted by many. That is, it was encouraged by many, the text said. They wanted to do right in spite of all the problems they had. Let's go to Revelation chapter 2. The church at Ephesus was described as a church that had left its first love. And in spite of the fact, here is a church that had problems. And oh, did it have problems. Verse 6 says, you have those who hate the deed. You have those who hate the deeds of the Nicolaitans, which I also hate. What I want you to see is, even though this church had left their first love, even though it was a church that was failing, there was some in their midst still wanting to do what was right. And what I'm suggesting to you is the center is holding. What does it mean? It means the family unit stays strong even if everything else around them fails. You may be a part of a local church that's going down the tubes. The center is holding when the family does what it ought to do in spite of what the local church may do. The family unit that stays strong is the kind of family, when their friends fail, the center still holds. They look at their friends and recognize, you may be going in the wrong direction. You may be doing things contrary to the will of God, but we'll have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but I'll rather reprove them. That's when the center holds. And so what I'm suggesting to you tonight is the family unit stays strong and family members are faithful when everything else fails. When the center holds, what that means is the family unit stays spiritually strong. Is your family unit strong? Is the center holding in your family? Well, thirdly, let's talk about when the center does not hold. I'm not a football fan, and so I don't know a lot about football, but I know enough to know that if the center doesn't do his job, things aren't going to go well for the team. Things are going to crumble. They're not going to have the score that they need. When the center fails, there's disaster for the football team. Same thing is true in the family. If the center doesn't hold, what takes place? I want to tell you, the family comes apart. And many families have done so. When the center doesn't hold, the family comes apart. There are going to be strained relationships with your mate. There's a strained relationship between husband and wife. They may stay together, but I want to suggest to you that not every marriage that stays together and doesn't end in divorce is not always acceptable unto God. A family can stay together and refuse to divorce and still be contrary to the will of God. It may lead to strained relationships with children. It may lead to strained relationships with their parents. The center is not holding. The family may be in turmoil. And I want to tell you, there's a lot of families among the people of God whose families are in turmoil. When they come to services, everything looks fine. When you begin to peel back some of the layers, the family is in turmoil. There's fussing at the home. They're screaming at one another. They're yelling at one another. Refusing to talk to one another. Those are just a few things as elders we have to deal with sometimes. The family's coming apart. Many homes are dysfunctional, and they think that's normal. Some are ending in divorce, even among the people of God. The center is not holding. When our homes are dysfunctional, family is in turmoil. But what else takes place? When the center does not hold, I want to tell you, we lose our children to the world. When the center does not hold, we lose our children to the world. Well, consider with me that they may not obey the gospel. It may be because of the lack of teaching in the home and in the family. The lack of interest in spiritual things. Maybe it's the lack of priority that's not being emphasized in the family causes their children, they may never obey the gospel. If they do, sometimes they remain weak. Sometimes they may become ultimately those who depart from the Lord. You've seen it time and again. Here the home wasn't what it ought to be. The children are weak even though they're baptized. The reason all of that happens? Well, let's turn to Proverbs chapter 12 and in verse 26. Cause the home isn't as it should be. Cause the home is not what it ought to be. They allow the influence of the world to come upon their children. Let's turn to Proverbs chapter 12, if you will, and in verse 26. The children become influenced by the friends of the world. Look at chapter 12, verse 26. The righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked lead them astray. Why is it that sometimes our children are lost to the world? It's because the lack of the center holding in the family, we've allowed the influence of the world to come on our children. We've allowed them to run with the wrong crowd. when the wrong crowd led them astray. Maybe it's because of a poor example of the parents. Ecclesiastes 16 and 44 says, like mother, like daughter. That was a proverb, by the way. But that's not in the book of Proverbs. It's a proverb that's found in the book of Ezekiel. Like mother, like daughter. We might say like father, like son. Listen to me carefully. As I suggest to you, don't be surprised when your children turn out to be just like you trained them. You say, well, I didn't teach them not to go to service. You set the example before them of missing a lot of services. I didn't teach them that God wasn't important. You set a poor example before them. And so it turns out that the children will be just like the parents taught them by their example. The poor example is why sometimes we're losing our children to the world. Maybe the lack of standards at home. It may start with a lack of discipline with the children. It may be a laxity of standards, of morals. We allow our children to go to the prom. We allow our children to go to the dance. We allow them to go places where there's drinking. And then we scratch our heads and wonder why they don't think anything's wrong with that. And so because of that, we may be losing our children to the world. Here's something else. What happens when the sinner doesn't hold? The family may come all apart. We may lose our children to the world. Our children may be greatly influenced by loose thinking. Because the sinner is not holding, our children easily swallow what they may hear in school. Listen to me carefully. When the sinner is holding, and parents are what they ought to be, and they're teaching their children at home, when they come home and say, you know what? My biology teacher told me that we all came from some kind of explosion. That's not going to have a great impact because the sinner is holding. So when the sinner doesn't hold, that child's going to be influenced by that teacher at school about evolution. Or maybe about how a marriage is not just a man and a woman, it's a man and a man, or a woman and a woman, or a man and an animal, or a woman and an animal. And so where are they learning that? They may be learning that at school, but they're learning it because the sinner's not holding. They easily swallow what they hear in school. The child may buy into the concepts they get at social media. And why is that going to be an influence on them? Because the sinner's not holding at home. Our children are greatly influenced by loose thinking. Finally, they get off to college and they're greatly influenced by their professors of the university who question the authenticity of the scriptures. They question the inspiration of the Bible. They tell them there's lost books of the Bible we don't have. They tell them creation happened in millions of years and not in 6 days. They tell them that Jonah could not have been swallowed by a great fish. The numbers of the children of Israel who came out of Egypt are exaggerated. The ages of Genesis 5 are overblown. And they begin to question the inspiration of the scriptures. They're impressed by those doctors because the sinner is not holding. And I want to suggest to you, 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33 says that they could easily be corrupted. Be not deceived. Evil communications corrupts good morals. When the sinner is not holding, and we're not doing our jobs as parents, the children could be greatly influenced by loose thinking. Here's something else that can happen. What happens when the sinner does not hold? Churches are going to become weaker. Because if we're raising a group of children that are weaker in the faith, then that's the crop from which we're going to have leaders and preachers and elders and deacons, and Bible class teachers. We have weak leadership. And there are churches all across the country that don't have men qualified to serve as elders because disaster in the home and the family. Maybe it was their own family, or maybe they were raised in a family that didn't teach them how to be the people they ought to be. And so we don't have leaders in some churches because the sinner's not holding in some homes and families. And so we end up with weak churches. Morals are confused. In Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 20, there are those who call evil good and good evil. Why is it that we live in a society that thinks that some principle of righteousness is evil, but some principle of evil is somehow good? And we look at those who are having homosexual relationships and they're to be praised and say, that's good. Those who hold to a marriage being a man and a woman, that's somehow evil to suggest that. That's because there's a confusion of morals. Why do we have confusion of morals? The sinner is not holding. The sinner's coming apart in the homes and the family. And I'll tell you something else, the nation deteriorates. Righteousness exalts a nation, the proverb writer would say. But sin is a reproach to any people. And so when the sinner is not holding, the nation begins to deteriorate. The nation goes down the tube because the sinner is not holding. When the sinner doesn't hold, everything around us crumbles. Don't be surprised. When the family comes apart, the church is weakened, the nation crumbles because the sinner is not holding. There's a danger when the sinner doesn't hold. But let's conclude our lesson by focusing on this, how the sinner holds. How does the sinner hold? How do you go about doing that? You say, well, preacher, I'm intrigued by this, and I want my home and my family to be what it ought to be. And I want the sinner to hold. And maybe you're just entering into a marriage relationship or contemplating entering into a marriage relationship. Maybe you're starting a young family and you say, I want the sinner to hold. How do you do that? Let's begin listing the ways. The sinner holds when the family has a leader. The sinner holds when the family has a leader. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 25. God appointed the husband and the father to lead. The husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is also the head of the church. He's the Savior of the body. That was a God-appointed role. God appointed him as the leader. That does not suggest that he is to mount that as a boss, some kind of king, and rule with an iron fist. It bears the idea of responsibility more than anything else. It's a weighty responsibility that falls upon his shoulders. That I'm the leader of this home and I'm the leader of this family. God's now made me the leader as we've entered into this marriage relationship. And when children are come along, then I'm the leader of this family. He gives direction. And he gives guidance. And it is his responsibility to so do. There, the spiritual direction is his responsibility, Ephesians chapter 6. Do not provoke your children to wrath. Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. It may be the mother who is skilled at teaching and training the children. She maybe have a greater knack for training them and disciplining them, but the ultimate responsibility rests on his shoulders. I want to tell you, when the sinner holds, here's how it holds, is when the family has a leader. Not a husband who pushes that off on his wife. And so that if there's any blame to be given, he can blame her for the failure of the family. Several years ago, we still have horses and ride horses, but I had a gelding that I rode a good bit. And my son rode a mare at the time. And his mare was a leader, but my gelding wanted to be the leader. If you ride trail horses, you understand sometimes as a horse wants to be the leader, wants to be out front. And my horse wanted to be the leader. He'd stand out front and he would strut and he'd take off until it came to something scary in the trail. We'd come to a narrow patch of the woods where it'd be dark and he'd back off and let that filly or mare lead through there. And when he saw it was safe, he would pass her up and strut out on the other side like he had led the whole way. I'll tell you, there are husbands like that. There are husbands who want to lead. They want the credit. But when there's something he don't want to make a decision about, he pushes his wife out front. You make that decision. And when it goes well, we make that decision. We nothing. He let her do the job, and then he takes the credit. What I want to suggest to you is a home that where the sinner holds is where they have a leader that's a real leader who takes the responsibility and will take the blame when things don't go well. They have a leader. What else do we do for the sinner to hold? A family that has the sinner holding. The sinner is holding when children have guidance. Parents are to teach their children. We've already quoted these two passages. Deuteronomy chapter 6 beginning at verse 7. You shall teach them diligently to your children. Look at that word diligent. And see where that comes from. It comes from a word which means as a sharp instrument, you press them into your children. But often people say, I tell you what, with my children, I want them to grow up and have their own faith, and I want them to develop. I want them to figure it out for themselves. I don't want to try to influence them. God, through Moses, said, you press them into your children. You talk of them when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up. Fathers, don't provoke them to wrath, but bring them up in the training and the admonition of the Lord. Parents are to teach their children. They have some guidance. Look at Judges 2 and in verse 9. Remember there was a generation that arose after Joshua? Look at Judges 2 and in verse 9. There arose another generation after them that did not know the Lord, nor the work he had done for Israel. Godly parents do not want their children to not know who God is. They don't want that to happen. They want their children to know the Lord. They don't want the generation after them to grow up and say, we don't know who God is. We don't have a clue who God is. Let's go to the 78th Psalm. By the way, Psalm 78, you may look at Judges 2:10 and say, how did that happen? How did that happen? I think Psalm 78 may give us some clue. Let's go to Psalm 78 and see if we can find out how that happened. How did they have a generation that grew up that didn't know the Lord? Well, let's turn to Psalm 78, looking beginning at verse 3. Psalm 78 and verse 3. He says, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us, which we did not hide from their children, telling to the generation to come the praises of God. Now we're going to go on, but stop there for a moment. Here's what I want you to see. One generation is to teach the next generation. You want to make sure the center holds in the next generation, your children know the Lord? Teach it to them. That's the point. Let's read further. Look at verse 4. For he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers, that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, the children who would be born. Now let's read further. That they may arise and declare them to their children, that they may set their hope in God and not forget the works of God. How are you going to keep them from raising up and not knowing who God is? One generation teaches the next generation. What I'm trying to suggest to you is that children have guidance when the center holds. How does the center hold? When you have a leader in the home and children have direction and they have guidance. Parents are not allowing their children to do whatever they want. They give them guidance. But furthermore, the center is holding when children have discipline. When children have discipline, behavior is going to be corrected when the center is holding. Proverbs 22:15. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. Who wouldn't understand that? Children are going to be children. Children misbehave. That's the point. We say sometimes, you know what, boys will just be boys. That means they'll misbehave. They'll do things they shouldn't. That's right. That's what the proverb said. But let's read further. The text says, but the rod, what's the rod? Look the word rod up. A switch or a branch. In other words, spanking will drive it far from him. Foolishness is bound in the heart of the child. Children will misbehave, but a switch will take care of that. You want the center to hold? Children need discipline. They cannot be left to themselves. A son left to himself will bring his mother to shame, the proverb writer would say. They cannot be left to themselves. They need guidance. They need discipline. Well, furthermore, when the center holds, how does it hold? It holds when faith controls. It holds when faith controls. Where we walk by faith and not by sight. We're walking by faith. Having faith strong like Abraham had, that drives one to do what others would not do. Remember what Abraham did? Not being weak in faith. He was strong in faith. He believed even God. What did he believe? That he would have a child when God said he would have a child, even though that didn't seem reasonable. Then what else he did? He was willing to sacrifice his son. He was willing to go to a land that God had shown him. He'd never seen it before, but he's willing to travel to a country. He was willing to do what no one else was willing to do. I want to tell you, that's what faith does for you. If the center's going to hold in your family, you're going to be driven by faith. That means you're willing to do what everyone else may think you're crazy in doing because you're driven not by your own desire, not by society. All decisions and directions are determined by your faith. You say, we're going to do this because it's right. He said, well, no one else is doing it. It doesn't matter. Society thinks you're crazy. It doesn't matter. This is what's right. We're driven by faith. The center is going to hold. How does it hold? When the examples are clear and the examples are strong. We've already cited Ecclesiastes, or Ezekiel rather, 16 and 44. Children usually follow the example they see. Now, there are exceptions. That's the nature of Proverbs. But you show me a child that grew up in a Christian home, and this child is strong and faithful. Most likely, those parents were strong and faithful. You show me a Christian that's weak and doesn't attend very well. They probably grew up in a home they were weak and didn't attend very well. You say, I know exceptions. Sure, you know exceptions. Those are the rules. Children, again, turn out to be just like they were trained. A righteous man's children are blessed after him, the proverb writer would say in Proverbs 20 and verse 7. Why are they so blessed? Because he's leading them in the way of righteousness. Examples must not send a mixed signal. You don't tell your child the importance of serving God, and then you don't exemplify that in your life. You don't tell a child how important it is to love your wife or to love your husband, and then you don't show it in the home. Center is holding when the examples are clear and the examples are strong. But finally, I want to suggest to you the center will hold. And here's how it holds, is when love reigns in the home. Love binds the family together. In Ephesians chapter 5 and chapter 6, those two chapters, says the husband is to love the wife, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. So not only does he say a husband is to love his wife, but the degree to which he's to love her. Even as Christ who gave himself for the church. And he's to love his wife even as himself. Furthermore, chapter 5 verse 33 says the wife is to see that she reverences or respects her husband. Titus chapter 2, women are taught, the older women are to teach the younger women to love their husbands and to love their children. And so love is that which binds the family together. The center is going to hold when every member is assured that they are loved. When the husband understands my wife and my children love me. And the wife understands my children and my husband love me. And the children are assured my parents love me. The child is assured my parents are loving me. We all are assured of love. I want to tell you that others in the family will forgive many mistakes, and there will be many, if they are assured they are loved. The wife will forgive the husband. The husband will forgive the wife. The parents will forgive the children, the parents, and on down the line when they are assured that they are being loved. The center's going to hold. How does it hold? Well, if the family has a leader that's a real leader, and the children have guidance, and the children have discipline, faith controls the family. The examples are clear, and when love reigns, when the family is what it ought to be and what it should be, then the center will hold. When the center holds, what a concept. Interesting concept, isn't it? When the center holds. Is the center holding in your family? Or is it coming apart? How is it doing in your home and in your family? Here's what we've seen. We've talked tonight about the family, and the home is the center because it began with creation. It was there before government. It was there before the nations. It was there before the church itself. The family and the home is the center. That's where all begins. That's where all teaching starts. And everything around us is a reflection of the home. That's why family and home is the center. We've talked about what it means that the center holds. Family is strong, regardless of everything else going around in the church, in society, friends or neighbors. Talk about when the center doesn't hold, what happens? The family comes apart. The church is weakened. You lose your children to the world. Nations begin to crumble. And then we've listed a number of ways in which how the center may hold. There may be one or more present this evening who's not a Christian, who's not a child of God. Would you come believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins, acknowledge your faith, and be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins? If you're subject in any way, would you come while together we stand and while we sing?